What up, though, everybody, and welcome to Checkpoint AFK, Checkpoint XP's lifestyle podcast, where we talk about gaming, we talk about politics and gaming, we talk about music and gaming, everything in between the sticks, all the stuff that happens when you are away from your keyboard. I am your host, Norris Howard, alongside Callie Sloan and Robbie Landis. We got a trifecta. We only got a triangle offense today, because we're going to be talking about some stuff with some massive spoilers in it. So we had to kick Chad and Weird Beard to the curb, because they have not finished the game in question. But we're going to get a little bit more into that later on in the show.
Before we get any further, you need to explain your microphone situation. Like, you have had the worst tech week in history.
I really did. So Monday comes around, we have our usual call, everything's going good. And then literally after we get off our Monday call, our internet starts completely bugging out. I'm not sure if it was something. I know they had some bad weather in the southern U.S., but that shouldn't affect us all the way up here in Michigan. But by Tuesday, our internet was completely out for the vast majority of the day. Now, here's the thing. We record Checkpoint XP on campus, our college esports show, on Tuesdays. I couldn't be in this week's episode because we didn't have internet until, like, 4 p.m. Over here. So, that sucked. Right after that, I try to connect and do some voiceover stuff that we do for the show. And this Blue Yeti here completely craps out. Just doesn't work anymore. Doesn't cut on. Doesn't do anything. Does nothing.
Sounds like you need a new Yeti.
Oh,
Jesus Christ. Anyway, that was bad.
Amazing.
It was bad. Anyway, I take this whole thing apart, try to fix the, see if it's the USB port, do all sorts of stuff. Nothing works. Have to order a new microphone. As we speak right now, the microphone is on the truck, literally down the street. So, on top of that, internet still hasn't really been the best in the world. I got scared last night because my external hard drive on my PS4 almost crapped out. And I've just been scared to touch anything today. I just want to put myself in a bubble, just sit still until shit calms down.
You've got the Dr. Grant syndrome going on. Any tech you touch just doesn't work anymore.
It sucks, man, and I'm pissed off, because, like...
Well, at least you get to check off the tech apocalypse on your apocalypse bingo card.
It is true. And so I'm happy that shit seems to be working right now, but I'm still...
Knock on wood.
So we do apologize for Norris's mic quality this week. It will be back to normal next week.
Absolutely.
Allegedly. I mean, could happen.
Exactly. I mean, the microphone I could get could be, you know, a lemon. It could be something that came off, you know, off the boat from Wuhan and is just covered in virus. I don't know.
No, that's not okay. You can't say that.
I'm just being honest, okay? But anyway, I have to ask, do we have reviews?
Well, let's go on over here and check it out. We do have a review this week.
Yes!
Okay. So we don't have to chew everyone out. Now, that said, we only have one. So we're back down to zero after I read this. But we have an updated review from Tennis Pro, who says his review is still, the title is still dope. He says, love it. Just started getting into e-gaming. As a former athlete, it gives me a place to find new competitive energy. Found you guys on ESPN Fort Myers. Yes, I am 40 years old and a tennis professional.
You see, so all you people out there that are complaining that traditional sports aren't around and you don't think you can get value out of esports, proof.
One guy in Florida says, yes, you can.
Doesn't matter. Look, the point is, he comes from a traditional sports background, and it's the competitive aspect of it that draws him in. I mean, that's all we can ask for. Like come on, man.
Especially right now when there's not a whole lot of other competition to watch. You know, the NFL draft was last night, and it was, first of all, the weirdest draft I've ever seen.
Okay. Robbie, I'm sorry, but you ain't gonna have much to add to this conversation. I got to talk about this right now.
Yeah.
NFL draft from home, let's do it like that from now on, please.
It was so
because
bad.
That shit was so bad, but so amazing. Dude, they had Jerry Jones just sitting in his, like, billion-dollar yacht that looked like a... oh, it straight up was a Bond villain headquarters. It looked like Spectre in his yacht. And then they had the guy whose girlfriend tried to look at his phone. He just snatches it from it.
Dude, I saw that clip. I didn't see that clip.
Dude, the NFL draft was nuts. I want us to keep it that way.
The other thing that I saw, too, was someone like, I forget who it was, but they're like, guys, this dude right here is one of the first draft picks from the NFL. And it was his Twitter. And it was just like 7 tweets of him being like, yo, what if Big Bird sold drugs? What if you caught Big Bird smashing Cookie Monster? Like, it was just like 7 tweets of that in a row.
Wait, Joe Burrow had that posted?
I don't remember exactly who it was, but it was something else,
man. Whole event, though, it was so weird to watch. Like, and it is kind of like you see the same issues like that we run up against, where you'll see like 2 people talk at the same time, and the whole you go ahead. Like, you get a whole bunch of that. It's nice seeing professional level broadcasters have the exact same problems that you have on Zoom with your work.
Absolutely. But I think the biggest thing about it that I found entertaining is just the simple fact that everything just gets boiled down to its, like, most simplest form. There is nothing that needs to be extravagant about this. And that's the part that I kind of really like about everything nowadays, is that we spend so much money making everything so big that, like, and we've known this in the gaming and esports world since the beginning, is that, no, it can run just fine just with the bare necessities. It can still be fine. And I think sports and many other industries are learning that right now. And I think, like, work and entertainment is forever changed. And again, we will talk about something about entertainment changing and how it could change later on in the show. But I think it's a very interesting thing to look at traditional sports and how they're handling this in terms of, like, consumership. Because we got Donnie Wahlberg in the chat, which I know is not the real Donnie Wahlberg, but that cracks me up. But we got Donnie Wahlberg in the chat saying the guys on the Sports Hub, out in Boston, works in the Sports Hub, are upset if they might be made to cover esports if this goes on longer. Felger said he'd quit.
Oh my gosh.
All right.
Grow up and get with the times, old men.
Yeah, I mean, and shout out to the Sports Hub. They're also a Beasley station, so we're always happy to when we get to chat with the Sports Hub guys. But yeah, come on, guys. You're going to have to eventually just give props to esports, because at the end of the day, pandemic comes along, and what are you watching? Because we've got plenty of stuff to watch.
Look, it's not even just the pandemic either. Like, that's what the young people are watching. And if you want to stay with the times, you're going to have to get on board, or at some point, you're going to be replaced.
You know what this is? This is the same thing. This could be the same thing that happened to radio stations when everybody wanted to switch to urban formats, when, like, rap was really popping off and contemporary R&B, where everybody was like, no, we're a top 40. No, we're a classic rock station. And they're like, no, you're not. No, you're not.
You're exactly what we say you are.
You are what we say you are, and we're flipping. And that may be what happened to a lot of, you know, to some sports stations. They're going to have to cover esports in the future, and it just is what it is.
Listen, I've done now 4 interviews with various stations across the country looking for some gaming coverage, because they got morning shows that need to fill content right now, and they don't have much else to talk about. So I've been reached out to. I've been on in Vegas, Boston, New Jersey, and Kansas City, I believe it was. Yeah, to talk about gaming at this point, because people need stuff to talk about, and gaming is a big topic right now.
Man, listen, if somebody invites me on the radio station, they go, why are everybody so turned up about Final Fantasy VII? And I go, well, do you have a chair? Just pull it up, because we're about to talk about one of the best games ever freaking made the past 10 years.
But Norris is like, it started in 1997.
It all started in 1997 with something called the Nintendo Dolphin. Anyway, we are going to take a quick break, and we will be right back. We're going to talk a little bit about Fortnite, which I know you're not too thrilled about, but we're going to talk a little bit about Fortnite because a really ginormous event with Travis Scott took place on this weekend, and you should check it out if you get a chance to. So we'll be right back with more Checkpoint AMK.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Knocked one.
He's getting up. Knocked another.
Pop in the bat.
They're so weak. Gibraltar's so hurt.
Kind of self-hurting.
Let's fucking go, man.
We had the worst position and still won the game.
Sonny's on me. Give me speed, then. Hit for 152.
Yes! Let's go!
That was intense.
He's dropping to the right.
It's solo.
We're gonna push him together. He's in it!
Bro, let's go! Bro!
Hell yeah, bro!
Let's go, boy!
Woo! So the first one coming up is a little bit of a rematch from, I believe it was last week or the week before. Getting them a little mixed up there. Everything's during the quarantine starting to blur together. But the Atlanta Reign and the Philadelphia Fusion, once again, going to go head-to-head. I believe the Reign took the Fusion to a Game 5 last time. So, Jake, I have to know, do you think that the Fusion are going to be able to stay on top of their game, or do you think that someone might finally get, well, I guess it would be the second win over the Fusion, but might finally put the brakes on them?
Well, I mean, you know, you have to look at this match going in and just predict Philly to win just because they are the top team in the region right now, arguably the top team in the entire league right now. So I wouldn't predict anybody over them. But, you know, Reign have shown time and time again that they have the mental fortitude to focus on themselves, focus on their own gameplay, and not let their opponent's strength get to their head. So...
Yo, welcome back to Checkpoint AFK, another at-home edition here with Callie Sloan and Robbie Landis.
I'm take it back. Howard, your host. Move your mic away a little bit. You're breathing into it now. Sorry. it's anyway, a damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Yeah, I know. This is what happens when you have to use a freaking headset mic because of your technical difficulties. But anyway, we are going to be talking about a really big event that went down in Fortnite over this weekend. And that's like rap superstar Travis Scott did an in-game performance in Fortnite that, in my opinion, blew almost everything that they did out of the water so far. Fortnite is a game that has had many sort of meta events. They had the Marshmallow DJ event. They did the Thanos event a couple years ago. A lot of people forgot about the whole Thanos event.
I think they're in the midst of a Deadpool event too right now.
Yeah, they have a Deadpool event that is currently live. And they did a preview for the latest Star Wars movie, for The Rise of Skywalker. They previewed a scene in-game. And so this is a game that is very used to these really huge events, these really big moments that people love to coalesce around and talk about. And I expected this Travis Scott concert to be similar to the Marshmallow event, where some sort of avatar of Travis Scott would be on a stage and you would go there and you would watch him perform a few songs and that would be it. Let me tell y'all something. This shit was on a whole nother level, okay? You got transported through supernovas. The whole map caught on fire. There was roller coasters everywhere. A giant planet came down with a speaker inside of it. There's a 50-foot Travis Scott.
Wait. So you're telling me it was the final scenes of Pacific Rim?
Yes, absolutely. Listen, there was a Travis Scott kaiju in the middle of this game, and this is absolutely amazing. He performed a few of his top songs, you know, like Sicko Mode and Goosebumps and stuff like that. But this performance was really cool. And if you haven't had a chance to watch a video of this, or if you haven't had a chance to check it out in game for yourself, I suggest that you do it, because I hate Fortnite. Everybody, I hate Fortnite with every fiber of my being. I do not like this game. I am going to keep this game installed so I can watch this performance multiple times. Multiple times. That's
I'm definitely good just checking out the VODs, but you're right. I too was thinking that it would probably be something similar to what Marshmello did, and kind of going forward, especially in Fortnite, you know, that would be one of sort of like the things that draws people in. And honestly, I'm a little surprised that they, not even just with the pandemic that's going on, but surprised that they haven't been doing stuff like that more regularly. But the fact that they were able to step it up from before, and it just like it's like he was just behind like the map, just like dancing like in the space beyond. It does make me wonder how they plan on stepping it up for whatever the next one is.
Right. Well, because there was a big jump in quality from DJ Marshmello one to this. Not to say that there was anything wrong with the first one. The DJ Marshmello thing was actually super cool and was kind of game changing at the time. But this definitely felt like an evolution of it. And I do wonder where it goes from here. And also, what's the next game going to be that tries to pull something like this?
Well, and that's sort of what, you know, the question I wanted to ask is that, you know, California, the governor of California, or excuse me, the mayor of LA, had came out and essentially said that there's not going to be any more concerts or sporting events in LA probably for the rest of the year. I mean, just being realistic, looking at the spread of COVID-19, there's no reason for us to risk people like that for the sake of entertainment. So if this becomes more of a reality for the remainder of the year, and really almost any time there's a outbreak or any time that there's a massive event, why can't we just pivot towards digital performances? Why can't we just sort of enjoy some of our favorite artists in a digital space? I think that this is very much so a possibility in a game like Fortnite. And let's be honest, they can start monetizing this like tomorrow if they wanted to.
See, I think that's probably the biggest thing for me, and something that this might seem like a little bit of a jump, but Overwatch League on Twitch, and seeing the move that it made from Twitch now to YouTube, no longer having the drops, shows you how weirdly important that was to people. You know, it went from 90 to 100K concurrent viewers to now seeing, you know, between 20 to 30K concurrent viewers. Because now at this point, people are only watching if they really want to watch. But even just the smallest digital goods or any sort of hint of digital exclusivity that may come along with it in terms of, you know, partnering up for that type of stuff, Norris, will get people coming to check you out, even if it's just for a few minutes. That's more potential eyes that prior to this, because of, you know, stuff like obviously geolocation, would not have been possible.
Well, think about
anywhere near possible.
Think about the DJ Sona skin in League of Legends, right? It's a different skin in that every time she changes her abilities, it plays a different song, and they're all kind of like trance EDM songs, and they're really cool. But how long is it going to be until a major artist supplies the songs for DJ Sona? You know what I mean? And that's like the selling point of the skin. That would be super cool. And we can't be far from that kind of thing happening.
No, not at all. And that's sort of the thing that I mean is that, you know, when you have sort of a situation that makes artists look for alternative ways to share their music or share their creations or really make money, I think gaming and video games and online communities are really kind of an untapped market and an untapped frontier. Like, I still play Final Fantasy 14 quite a bit, and there's a troop of Lalafells. I'm so disappointed in myself that I'm saying this, but there's a troop of Lalafells.
Not as disappointed as we are.
For the uninitiated, gnomes, basically.
Yeah, a troop of gnomes that walk around, and every Friday they do performances on different servers of, like, different music. They played the entirety of Freebird. All of it.
These are actual people, not something
This is not something that's been programmed in, but these are actual people. But I looked at something like that as something that is really creative and really interesting, But Fortnite is taking this whole thing to a new level. I mean, what was to stop them from saying, all right, as a part of your season pass, you get a free ticket to the 3 in-game concerts we're going to have.
Or you get a digital download for Travis's new single.
Well,
yes, exactly.
Or even beyond that, how long is it going to be until they partner up with a festival like Burning Man or something like that and just say, listen, there's no way you can go to Burning Man this year. However, Burning Man's going to be held in Fortnite.
Dude, if they holding Burning Man in Fortnite, that just seems just like a lot of STDs that people won't get. So I'm really happy about that.
I mean, is it really Burning Man if it doesn't burn?
That's true, but it's...
It was just an example. It could be any music festival.
It could be anything. It could be Bonnaroo. It could be Coachella. It could be any big music festival. But I think I like the way you're thinking about this, and I think that Fortnite is also looking at this kind of stuff, too, because this is brilliant. And again, if you haven't experienced any of these special events in Fortnite, I think you should, just to get a gauge on how interesting and big this thing really was. But I don't know what other game could do it, because Unreal is already super malleable, and plenty of developers already know how to make it do whatever the hell they want
it
to do.
Well, it also just lines up better, I think, with Fortnite's brand. I feel like if you tried to, you know, hold or put like a concert in, you know, like a match of League of Legends or Overwatch or Apex, it's just going to feel weird and off, you know? There's just something about the way that Fortnite has... just ingrained itself in the DNA of like our culture, that it just it makes more sense for Fortnite to do it.
Listen, League of Legends would absolutely let you do it. That you would just have to make your band in the game as characters from the game. Like that's all they would expect of you. But you're right. Like Fortnite, they built such an anything goes mindset into their game from the word go that when stuff like this happens, you just go, yeah, that's on brand for Fortnite. Like they could say almost anything.
Because
they put a giant burger out in the middle of the Nevada desert.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like short
everything is on brand for Fortnite.
Short
everything.
Of them being like bareback orgy fest, you'd be like, yeah, that's on brand for Fortnite. Like,
well,
I'm not saying there are no limits, but there's very few.
I mean, again, if they're getting together with Burning Man, you're going to see it.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, you're right. But the thing is, I think battle royales inherently are just, they're able to do it in battle royales, and I think MMOs could do it to a certain extent, but I'm not sure if there's any other games besides Fortnite that really could pull this kind of stuff off currently, and I downloaded the whole damn game just to watch this thing, so I think that's pretty cool. But
I think that's a win in their book. So
yeah, that's a win. But anyway, that's going to be it for that conversation. Like I said, if you guys have not checked out that performance, there's plenty of videos and YouTubes about it. If you're watching this live, there's still performances going on all weekend. So if you have Fortnite, you could go and watch it. You can check the listings on Fortnite's Twitter page and all that good stuff. And also, I'm doing a quick write-up on it on the website. So if you're hearing this on the back end, after we put it out to the podcast, you'll be able to go check out that story on CheckpointXP.com. But we are going to be right back. We're going to deep dive, all the way deep into Final Fantasy VII Remake, because we got opinions. We got so many opinions. There will be spoilers. So if you have not beat this game, I suggest you mute. All right, guys. We'll be back with more Checkpoint AFK.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
And I'll be whatever you want. put you on a pedestal up above.
And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Oh, we have an unprecedented outbreak.
Thousands of us walking the earth.
We might die at any moment.
Because we're under attack.
In which case, we must act fast.
Doctors are trying their best.
Working long hours and...
always sacrificing.
Their health.
To protect you.
Well, I'd very much like to thank them.
Thanks, Doctor.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you, Doctor.
Wait a minute.
What's the prognosis?
It's still changing.
So we have a novel virus and no vaccine at this time.
What should we do?
We gotta get everybody else back into the houses. We gotta keep them there.
In other words,
this is our lockdown, right? What that means is...
stay in your homes. Make no attempt to reach loved ones.
And take a long nap.
You can count me out.
You can count me out, too.
Some people are immune to good advice.
You know what I mean?
Those idiots.
I just need to make sure you fully understand.
Let's recap.
I'm begging you.
Stay inside.
Wash your hands.
And make sure you've got 10 feet of personal space around you.
Stay away from me. Stay away from me.
I didn't hear you wash your hands.
So think on this, lads.
When you're home watching TV.
Think about the
medical stuff.
Working for you. So I'm asking you.
Stay home.
In isolation.
To stop the virus.
All right, I'll do it.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
You stay classy, planet Earth.
Welcome back to another really, really great segment of Checkpoint AFK. Your host, Norris Howard, here alongside Callie Sloan and Robbie Landis, where we are going to be talking about one of the most awesome games to come out. Prolific games to come out in a very, very long time. The Final Fantasy VII Remake, a game that polarized this very cast before its release, that has brought us together like no other in our shared love and admiration for such a great game coming from Square Enix. Guys, before we dive deep into sort of the changes and the new things that we enjoy, I want to just get your opinion of what Square Enix was able to do with this one.
So, before we do that, I just once more want to iterate, just for anyone listening now or anyone in the chat, there will be spoilers
all kinds
the rest of this episode. So if that matters to you and you haven't finished it yet, because believe me, you wouldn't have thought that with a remake there'd be spoilers, but there are major spoilers. This is your last warning. Callie, go ahead.
All right. So I do want to start by saying that we as a cast, we frequently agree when things are dumb. We frequently agree when things are stupid. We can all point something and go, that is dumb. We never, ever agree when something is good. We never, someone on the cast thought it sucked. Always. This is the one time where we have all been like, yo, wow.
They did a great job.
They did a great job with this. It's amazing. And that's what I went into this game.
It's still not without its...
No.
It's Square Enixes, but we'll get to those.
Yeah, it's not without its Enixisms, but there are... After years of having to take Square Enix games and say, they're a bad game with some good ideas, I finally get to say one, this is a great game with some imperfections that can be ironed out in later installments in it. Like, there's nothing in it that can't be fixed relatively easy.
I think that's the best compliment that you can give to it, is that Final Fantasy VII is an imperfect masterpiece, which is exactly what the original was as well. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, God, there are blatant translation errors in the original FF7. Like, there are all kinds of things wrong with it, but it was a masterpiece nonetheless. Even if I didn't care for it, I can look at it and say, yeah, that's a great game.
So, all right, so... Because I'm not even necessarily sure exactly 100% sure where to start. But, I mean, do we want to keep beating around the bush, or do we just want to get the big thing out of the way?
Let's get the big thing out of the way.
Let's start with the ending.
With the ending, okay? Because we know that this game was going to follow a fairly linear path that put us pretty much outside of Midgar, where the game opens up at the end of the sort of... at the end of that chapter of the original game. We knew that's where the game would end. They told us that.
Yep.
However, we did not know what the hell was about to happen once you defeated Rollerball at the end of the chase sequence. And essentially what happened is the most Neon Genesis Evangelion anime ridiculousness.
I'd have chose a different title to talk about what happened at the end there, because they straight up pulled some Kingdom Hearts bullshit on us.
Absolutely.
But when Nora says Evangelion, you're talking 1.11. When you get to the end of it and you learn that it's a sequel and it's not actually a remake of it. And you're right. It's the exact same thing they kind of pulled on us here.
Yeah, absolutely. Because here is... You know, before we start talking about theories, essentially what happens is you fight through this massive battle with destiny, quote unquote destiny,
fate itself,
to change the outcome of what is happening with the original game.
Potentially.
All throughout the game, you have these little ghost things.
The mentors
that are trying to preserve what happened in the original game. They're trying to preserve that timeline. Every time something drastically different happens in the game, the Dementors show up and they're like, oh, no, absolutely not.
Which, by the way, is such a brilliant way of Square Enix handling the problem that we as the player know what is supposed to happen next. Like, as the player, we are kind of tempted to go, actually, I don't want to go to Sector 5 Reactor because I'm going to have to fight the Airbuster and, you know, we're going to fall down. And, like, I know what's going to happen and I know how it's going to end up. It's a problem. This is going to lead to them dropping the plate. But these kind of Dementors are, like, literally the game's embodiment of enforcing the original timeline, enforcing fate. And you are more fighting what you as the player knows is supposed to happen than you are the actual enemies of the game.
Yeah, and I think it's a very interesting take on it. And so the ending is sort of the culmination of these Dementors sort of saying, like, guys, you are fucking stuff up. You need to get back on track. And they fight against that. But in my opinion, what this actually is the Square Enix writers taking a meta narrative to give them more latitude with the rest of the game. Because we know exactly what is supposed to happen, which is at some point Aerith dies trying to summon Holy, and that motivates the rest of the party to go and continue to stop Sephiroth. We know that. However, I think with this allows for that to still happen, but in a way that we don't expect, because you can't do it the exact same way. It would remove all the emotional resonance, right?
What if that...
I think it would.
So hold on. Biggs, Wedge, and Jesse, the plate falling, that had no emotional resonance with you.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying, I think for people, Biggs, Wedge, and Jesse dying was still going to have emotional resonance because it was a scene that people wanted expanded. People wanted to feel more of that. People wanted to, oh my God, when they dropped the plate, this massive destruction and death, I want to see what they do. I want to see more of that. I think with Aerith dying, because that is so central. There are people who have never played FF7 who know Aerith dies. Yeah. They don't know about the plate dropping, but they know Aerith dies.
Yeah, the emotional impact of Biggs, Wedge, and Jesse dying this time around is so heightened by the fact that we got to actually learn more about them and spend some time with them. How much of Biggs, Wedge, and Jesse do you actually see in the original? Not very much.
I agree, but you don't think that same approach would work with Aerith as well? That they couldn't get you just as attached, like even more attached to her? Because we've already had discussions that this Aerith is so much better and so much more likable than the original one. See, look, from my opinion, first of all, like you said earlier, Callie, the game itself, the experience, it's pretty much a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. But what I'm struggling with is I feel like I'm not sure who this story was written with in mind, right? Because to a certain extent, I get the idea that, you know, and had I known from the beginning this was going to serve as a reboot, I probably would have been on board with it, because I'd have been like, there's no way that they can live up to the original. I've said that on multiple occasions before. It can't do what the original one did again, right? Yeah. And I think that when they try to introduce change, the idea of introducing change to the story, that people would be like, no, you can't do that. You have to say exactly how you did in the original game, right?
Yeah.
But because of the fact that they're stretching this out, we also recognize the fact that they do have to add more stuff, right?
Correct.
They have to be able to expand more on the stories and on the characters, right? So, like, the idea of Cloud not wanting to go, or Barrett not wanting Cloud to come to Sector 5 Reactor for that mission, being like, you know, you're out, we don't need you no more. And then they had to use the Dementors to bring him back in. I mean, they could have just as easily had Jesse suffer some other sort of accident or whatever that wasn't fate-related, and they bring him back in.
Well, but
and And I don't think that anyone would have batted an eye at that. And the fact that 95% of this game does actually stay on track, if you'd have taken the Dementors out, had them stay in there, they actually did what I didn't think that they would be able to do. And they had this feel just as impactful and just as special as what the original game did, staying on track. And I feel like what they thought they had to do was come up with some mind-bending, some sort of big, it's not actually what you thought it was, so now you don't have to worry about us ruining the game because we're going to make a different one. But I actually honestly think they could have remade the game beat for beat, introduced other stuff that they wanted to, and it actually would have been just as special.
You're saying that if they had gone for it, they would have proved you wrong on what you said originally. Thought.
I just think to that point, though, that I think you still have to do something that subverts the expectation, right? Because if you just go and remake the game beat for beat and everybody knows what's coming at the exact moment that it's coming at, I think you do remove some of the emotion. And by virtue of the fact that we've done more learning about Biggs, Wedge, and Jesse, the fact that we've explored more of Midgard, the fact that everything doesn't happen in a one-for-one, I think, yeah, you have to do something, in my opinion, that kind of explains that. And I think by having the Dementors or the Whispers, I'm going to use the actual term that they use in the game, the Whispers, the will of the planet, if you will. I think by introducing them and by introducing them as a plot device, no, it is not the most deft or, you know, creative thing in the world. It's not. But I think by introducing them, you allow for the concept of being able to hit the same plot beats in a very, very different way. Because let's say you put Aerith in a very different situation. Let's say she still dies, but she dies in a way that, or let's say Aerith lives, excuse me. Let's say Aerith lives. That takes away literally what is the core of Final Fantasy VII's story.
I agree. It also betrays the original message.
Right.
Death is final. That death is not something that we can outrun.
And it's part of life, yeah.
Absolutely.
See, look, I'm not even saying that this can't work either, right? I definitely think that in order to... We're not going to know for sure until we get more of the game. Like right. That's just the of it, right?
And the Dementors won't be in the next game, theoretically. We're now on a new timeline.
I don't think that they needed this whole Nomura, Kingdom Hearts, we have to defy fate thing to be able to do the stuff that they wanted to do,
but
right?
But if they didn't, then that game has no real climax. Like, that's the thing, is that you get out of Midgard, you beat Rollerball. If Rollerball was the final boss of that game, everybody would talk about how that game was literally ruined. Like, now people can at least debate about it and at least have feelings. If they'd had Rollerball and you stand at the edge of the freeway and you just walk into the wilderness and that's the end of the game, people would be like, that was a trash ending.
To that end, before we spend the entirety of our show talking about this, I have to talk about the Sephiroth fight, because
actually it was just
a great fight.
Was just about to get that as well, because you're right.
Oh my God.
That would have felt very anticlimactic, right? But it doesn't have to be one or the other. It doesn't have to be, we'll either do the fate or don't do the fate, right? And I think the Sephiroth, using Sephiroth at the end of it, finally getting to sort of fight him at the end there, I think that you still could have had that without all of the Dementor fate stuff being in there.
So,
I mean, I think it becomes harder. I think you're right. Yes, they could have, but I think it becomes harder. But I think also what that says,
remaking one of the most prolific RPGs in the history of gaming shouldn't be an easy thing to do. So you're right. It would have been hard.
But I think what that does is it sets us up for a climax at the end of the entire story that we did not expect, but will provide the same amount of catharsis and emotional resonance. That's what I think it's about, because they use so much already from the original FF7 ending that you can't repeat that again. So I already know this is going to go off on a separate path. And I'm excited now because now I don't know what's about to happen. You took a game that I knew every plot point. I knew every beat. I knew everything that was about to happen. We're going to go to freaking Fort Condor and then Xenon. And then we're going to see all this stuff in Cosmo Canyon. And now I don't know what the fuck is about to happen. And I think that that is exciting to me. For a game that I played a bajillion times.
So
I mean, if you're going from at that angle, then yes, that's fine. I understand that, right? But you know, again, for me, I don't necessarily have to be surprised by what the major beats are, right? I think you can still go into something understanding what the major beats are, but also knowing that what was once one game is now going to be three or four games. There's going to be new stuff in there, and it's about that journey. And specifically with FF7, knowing what's going to happen, the messages and the metaphors that they could have leaned on was what was present in the original one, and that was the idea that death happens. Death is final. It's a part of life, and you have to deal with that. And they could have explored those sort of messages even more in depth than they could have in the original one.
I think it's all
about telling the story or the message differently, but not necessarily needing to change it.
So I think one thing that they've set themselves up for is, you know, they now have what's valuable is that they can really take it wherever they want to go. They get to tell a new story within the context of an old story, but they've also set themselves up with a great deal of challenge. In many ways, we're now starting to reach the point, we're starting to reach late season Game of Thrones when they didn't have the books to go off of anymore. This time, they're not just going to get to follow the script almost beat for beat and change the things that were kind of silly last time. This time, they're going to have to really create a lot that's going to, you know, the second game is going to feel vastly different from the first game. So that's going to be a challenge for them. But again, I have to talk about the Sephiroth battle because
yeah. It
has been a long time since a battle has cracked my top 10 boss battles of all time list. And this one absolutely did. The music in this boss battle was so on point. The visuals were so on point. That cutscene, the cutscene fight that you get after you do the actual boss fight is so good. Sarah was sitting next to me watching it. It just goes, man, girls who make AMVs today are so spoiled. This is bullshit. Like, like they're gonna have that to work with. Like,
yeah, it's you know, in a thing, and that's sort of what I was saying about they have already taken so much from the original FF7 ending, but the fight itself, once you get to the Sephiroth part, is so brilliant in the fact that it has all of this emotional overture, in the fact that Sephiroth feels like at any moment he could just haul off and whoop everybody's ass.
Did you enjoy that as his classic Final Fantasy, the boss before the final boss was actually harder? Did you have more trouble with Bahamut than Sephiroth? Because I certainly did.
No.
I did not, because I had Dolphin Flurry and Ascension were both
so
up.
So did I.
Oh, okay. I didn't have either of mine up. And, like, dude, that Bahamut fight was such a pain in the ass.
So I have a very quick thing that I just want to throw out there, because IGN put out a theory that said that those three enemies that you fight within that last area are representations of Barret, Tifa, and Cloud, because one has a sword, one has a gun arm, and one has fists, basically. Mm. When you scan them, they say, like, these are avatars from the future looking to protect the timeline or whatever, right? Here's the thing. I don't think it's them at all. I don't think it's future Barret, Tifa, and whoever. If you look at what song is playing, that song is called Advent. I think what that is that's Kadaj, Laz, and Yazoo.
That's who I took it to me.
When we were playing through it,
I thought I was like, there was a lot of Advent Children in the way that they fight and move in that cutscene too. That's what I took it to mean.
Yeah, and they have like very similar move sets. So I think when you combine all that, we had all the before Crisis and Crisis Core stuff layered on top of the game. Then you have the Advent Children stuff layered on top of the game. There is a lot in the next game that we are going to get that couldn't even begin to be explored in the original game. Like, me personally, I think Wutai is now mandatory. I think you have to do. I think Wutai is a serious arc that you're going to have to do that is going to be more than just Don Cornero Part 2. I think it is going to be a very serious arc that See, was it going to be an original game?
That right there is exactly the reason why I don't think that you needed to worry about, like, oh, well, you're not going to surprise people with Ares' death if you don't change it. There's enough that you can now put in there and explore that people will still be surprised by the new stuff that's added. And you know what I think would make this game perfect? Like, I would have no complaints about, well, except for having to fight the Kingdom Hearts beginner boss as a final boss battle. Is if this was the only game. If this served to sort of the idea that it was being rebooted and they're not going to make a second one, this was it, I'd be okay with that. Because now what I'm afraid is going to happen is, even if the next one's good, I feel like what's going to happen next is the classic Square Enix stuff, where they're going to get bogged down and mired in the usual Square Enix stuff that ends up not making any sense, and they don't know how to fix it, so they just throw more stuff in there.
Yeah, and we're going to have to watch an anime in between.
It's going to be Nomura's next Kingdom Hearts project.
But you know what? I think by doing that last act, that it is the exact opposite. I think what they've done is they said, there are some things that we have to change that on the surface are probably not going to be easily explainable, right? And I think they put the Whisperers and the Dementors in it because they're saying we're going to have to pull in so much other ancillary stuff that was not explained in the original game that we need to have some sort of device in the game that says shit's going to be different. I think they felt, and I'm not saying I agree, but I'm saying I think they felt that they had to have some sort of representation of that in the game.
Right.
Because we now know that in a separate timeline somewhere that Zack is alive.
Yeah, which is another thing that I'm like, how did defeating fate change the past? But okay.
Well, because time isn't linear. It's
time-wimey stuff, man.
Exactly. So even if they decide, even if you're right, and they're like, all right, we're not using the Dementors anymore because they were defeated, now they're still wanting, like...
No, here's the thing. To be perfectly honest, I don't think the Zack thing, that could end up bearing no importance whatsoever. Like, legitimately, that could be...
Which still would go to my point that they're just going to get so convoluted in what they're trying to do.
No, what I'm saying is it doesn't need to bear on anything that they're doing in the second game. I think that was their thing. I said, by defeating fate, Zack lived, and that's that particular timeline's happily ever after. Zack and Cloud live, and everything's cool. But now we have this other thing, this other timeline, the main one that you're playing that has to be solved, that has to be resolved. I don't think you even need to touch on the Zack thing. I think that's a touch, and by showing the little stamp chip bag, it shows this is not the reality that you're in, but you've changed something, and you've changed something for the better by doing this. And I think that's more so the... objective.
Well,
but
that's a nice take. I don't know that I believe that from Square Enix, but it's a nice take. It's a nice thought for sure.
Yeah, and here's the thing. There's some other little like nods and things that I think are really, really cool in this game. Like the mural in Aerith's old room. When you beat what is that boss? When you're in Shinra and you beat after you beat the experiment and pass out, if you look at that mural, it is the black materia at the center, and there's all sorts of representations of characters and flora and fauna swirling around the black materia to stop it. And I think what the game has been telling us throughout the very beginning all the way to the end is that I think Aerith knew and always knew, even in the original game, that she had to die. I think even in the original game, she knew that. And that's why she is so adamant about joining Cloud. She's so adamant about helping the party at any cost. She's so adamant about cutting a deal, by going to Shinra, by doing all this stuff.
See, that would have put an entirely different spin on the events, even if they stayed the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think for a new person, you can't just put that out there like Aerith always knew. For somebody who never played that game, I think they go like that's not important to me. So I get you, and I understand what you're saying. I don't think that the ending of this game ruins what we did, nor do I think...
No, you're right, it doesn't.
Nor do I think it ruins what's to come. I think
depending on how they execute it.
It's true, but I think if this game is any indication on the care that they are going to bring to this world in these characters, then we are in for a game that is even better than the one that we just played. To be perfectly honest.
We'll see.
And I'm not saying I have full faith in they could still Enix this shit up, but but I'm saying that I feel a lot better about what they could do with this game after what I just played. Because even if you give me little parts that are kind of silly and don't make sense, the original had little parts and things that didn't make sense that you just played through and the game was still brilliant. I think people, and Robbie including you, I think people are so polarized by this ending that they're forgetting that the rest of the game, the other 95% of the game was so fucking good.
False. Because I still to this point contend that the ending to Mass Effect did not ruin the journey, right? You know, there's a great piece that I was trying to find here really quick so I could also link it to people that Heather Alexander over at Kotaku did about the ending to FF. And because I'm still trying to again, struggle with who was this game made for? Was it made for new fans? Was it made for old fans? Because there's a lot of, I feel like there's a lot of stuff in there that you gotta satisfy both.
That's the problem.
That contradicts with it, right? And she talks about the idea that this game was made for the character, a chance to give them sort of put the destiny back in their own hands and give them a chance to, you know, to do something different, to try something new. And that honestly, it did help me to grasp with some of my feelings.
But we do spend a lot of time trying to figure out who in the fan base something is for. And there is something to be said for an artistic stance to it. It was made for the sake of story. I can see that.
Yes, yes. But I think that first of all, somehow I was strangely vindicated on both fronts with this games because, you know, when it was first announced, I talked about how, like, if they ruin it, then I win because I was right. And if they don't, and it's a good, fun game, I win because I get to play it. And I never for once thought that I would feel both of those things simultaneously about the game.
Right.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I also don't think that we're going to get a full answer about how the saga of the Final Fantasy VII Remake plays out until we get more of the game.
So,
because there is still plenty of time for them to ruin what they've created.
So I have a question. What do they have to do in the next installment of this game to make you feel comfortable with the decision that they made at the end of this one? Because to me, that's the thing. I am okay with giving the creators the latitude to do something different, and I'm just expecting what I don't know. But for you, it sounds like the unknown is almost more of a source of anxiety for you in terms of what they do next in the game. So what can they do to make you feel better about it?
I honestly won't know until I feel it, because I don't want to sit here and say that, you know, they can't just not go off and do, like, their whole own thing. You know, Tifa dies instead for some other reason. Aeris lives. Holy doesn't actually do what it's supposed to do. Sephiroth finds a different way to try and destroy the, like, I don't know how I would feel until I see it in execution.
Well, Robbie,
I just don't want this to become the next Kingdom Hearts where it's all about heart and family, and every game they pile more answers and more conspiracies and more shit that doesn't make sense on top of other stuff.
Well, what I'm saying is they didn't build that in this game. They did.
They didn't build that in the first Kingdom Hearts either.
All right, that's fair.
But I think the point that Robbie you're getting at is, and it's a pertinent one, is what they've earned with this game by making the game as well as they did. They have earned me not going on the air and saying I demand A, B, C, and D for me to like the next game. They have earned the right for me to go.
That's fine.
You know what? Put out the next game. If it's an enjoyable experience, you will get nice things said about you. Like, you know, it doesn't require... When they screwed up in Final Fantasy XIV, it became my task to think of ways to fix it and demands and things that I wanted to see changed, because it's hard to get on the air and just vocally criticize with having no suggestions for how to improve it. I don't need to suggest ways to improve this game because it's really good. If you go and make another game and it's an enjoyable experience, you have justified the decisions you made in this game.
See, I'm not disappointed in this game except for, again, the Heartless that you have to fight at the end. I think what disappointed me was I didn't have faith that they could recreate the story of the start of Seven to the end of Midgar and have it feel worthwhile.
It was a full game.
Well, not just a full game. That it would inspire within me the exact same feelings that I felt for the original, because I knew what was going to happen, right? But they did that. They did what I didn't think was possible. And then at the end of the game, they goes, but you know what? You're not going to get that anymore. I didn't think that it was possible they could make what they said they were going to make.
I love that.
And then they didn't. And that's just something that I'm struggling with. No. See, the reason that I don't is because I don't think, and if an interview comes out that proves me wrong, that's fine. But I don't think that they did it as like, aha, we knew we could do it, and now we've defied your expectations. I think that they too thought, we can't do it, so we have to do something different. And they did it. And
I think with something as big as that at the end of the game, that was completely intentional. They knew what they were doing. And I love that. I love a subversion of expectation. Now, the execution, I cannot like. It wasn't great until we got to the Sephiroth fight, and I was just like, oh, you guys can still make really good boss battles. I forgot. But
see, if we'd just walked through and just fought Sephiroth, I don't know how much anger I would have at that. Yeah. But honestly, the entire Whisper stuff, like, I was just sitting here looking at my screen like, Nomura, you fucking kidding me?
I mean, but think about
at this point, I want Roche back.
But think about it. How can you? No, okay. That is the one thing we agree on. Roche is terrible.
Yeah, Roche is not great.
And never came back. He's like, we'll meet again.
No, Roche is going to be your recurring.
Yes, I know.
Your recurring jackass villain you have to fight all the time. You know what he is? He's Ultros. Roche is Ultros.
No, we are desperately out of time, but real quick, I do need to make sure we all agree on this. Johnny is Conrad Werner, right? Like, we can agree on that. We are going to see Johnny in every game, get more of the Johnny experience, and he is our Conrad Werner. That is a fact, right?
Yeah, yes. I guess.
Okay,
yes, good. We will see Johnny every game, we will see Roche every game, and we will see Reno and Rude every game.
Please bring back Leslie.
Yes, more Leslie. Yeah, and Leslie. Absolutely more Leslie.
Leslie's cool.
He's great.
Yeah. But, that is unfortunately going to be all the time that we have for today. The last thing I want to say is Tifa dying is a stupid theory because Tifa, it makes no narrative sense. She can't summon holes.
I mean, if they're able to change everything, maybe she dies for a different reason.
Okay, fine, cool. If you can explain it, well, do it. I don't care. But the thing is that we want you guys to reach out to us, give us your opinions about the game, give us your opinions about how you feel about it, you know, your playthroughs. We want to hear all your stories because it is a really great game that it does generate a lot of discussion, which in my opinion makes it a very, very well-made game and a very good game. But we are going to leave on that note for this week. Thank you guys for joining us on this week of Checkpoint AFK. I am your host, Norris Howard, here with Callie Sloan, Robbie Landis. Don't forget to go to the website, checkpointxp.com, where you can see all of our shows, the Owl's Nest, Checkpoint on Campus, the radio show, all the good stuff. You can see it there on the website. And check out our YouTube as well, because we put everything on YouTube. So if you didn't see it live, you can check it out over there. For Callie Sloan and Robbie Landis, I'm Norris Howard, and we hope to see you guys back for another installment of Checkpoint AFK. Toops.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.